and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, live here on WTCM, at least on this Thursday, as we welcome back Mr. Dennis Prout and Heidi Thompson. Good morning, all.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you, Ron.
Morning,
check,
Heidi.
Check. Am I?
Good
is my
morning,
mic
Ron.
On?
It's good to be here.
You bet. All right. So we have a lot to talk about today. Thursday, 6/10/21, June, baby. By the way, July 1st is the Thursday before July 4th. That is the day that we're here live. I intend that day to have several pieces of information regarding the Declaration of Independence and everything related to July 4th that we can jam in our approximate 40 minutes allotted during that day.
Beautiful.
So we will dedicate that day to our freedom and our independence and the history of that by shedding light on that whole subject. Ah, my gosh. Lots of reflection this week in thinking about this radio show. We love doing this. The amount of information that we have to share, that we get as financial advisors, is incredible. And it doesn't hurt our relationships as well that we're getting information from, as well as our educational sources. So we are attempting to add to that significantly. Last week, as I listened to the radio show rebroadcast on Saturday, I thought, well, man, I sound kind of tentative. And honestly, the reason is that I don't always like going into the stats and the details of what's going on in terms of sharing more statistical information. But given what's going on and the sea change that I see, SEE, of course, I think it's imperative that we recognize or do our best to try to recognize what's happening and how this significant change to our economy and the resultant impact to inflation is going to play its role. Part of that is recognizing our own blind spots, which Shay, when we were talking about the show, said, well, basically every show is about blind spots. Well, this is specifically related to investment blind spots as they relate to our ability to diversify and expect returns over time. In fact, when we were talking about the radio show, it's often quoted as we were discussing this that the average growth fund in the last 10 years has achieved a 12% rate of return per year, whatever it is. But what they always neglect to include is what did the average shareholder experience in that particular mutual fund? And usually it's less than half, 3 to 4%, because they're in and out at the wrong time. Their timing is often wrong, especially the more aggressive the mutual fund. So helping me to understand our cognitive dissonances, if you will, and that cognitive dissonance is actually one blind spot that we're going to be talking about here today. So I've got the headline here and showing it up there to Ron as well as to Heidi so that they can see this. But today, Heidi Thompson is joining us as well. She's going to be talking about Social Security. Thank you. Thank
Actually,
you.
Actually, it's long-term care.
But long-term care as well as Social Security. And then Shay has a ton of stats here today. I was kind of joking with her before the show. She basically almost had the whole thing highlighted. Lots of great stats I think you'll find very interesting. All right. Cognitive dissonance can cause investors to hold losing securities positions that they otherwise would sell because they want to avoid the mental pain associated with admitting they made a bad decision. Cognitive dissonance can cause investors to get caught up in herds of behavior. That is, people avoid information that counters an earlier decision. That's cognitive dissonance. Until so much counter information is released that investors herd together and cause a deluge of behavior that is counter to that decision. That's, you know, the herd behavior, the sheep all over the cliff, if you will. Oh, we're going to sell. Everyone else is selling. You know, the news is so, sorry, Ron, but generally the news feeds on that kind of behavior and they feed on negative information. Statistically, that's what people listen to. And why wouldn't they, you know, generate that kind of information? As much help as they're trying to be, obviously they're trying to inform us, that can also give us a diluted view, if you will, of what's really happening out there. Well, Dennis, you're so full of rose-colored glasses today. That could be argued, but statistically, it's been shown, and we've listed this before, that the news feeds tend to be much more negative, tend to orient toward negativity. Yes, Heidi?
Well, and I think all of us have... we don't want to miss out. We have a fear of missing out on something or being the last one to recognize something. So that's just part of human nature.
It is. It is. So the importance of diversification, the importance of holding some positions that perhaps you're uncomfortable with, but that make sense in the long term for your long-term financial success. Holding growth and income mutual funds or growth funds and understanding that you can hold those if you hold those in smaller sums or percentages within your portfolio. Obviously, your return is going to be lower, but so is your risk. But your return would be higher than zero given what current savings rates are at the bank. The problem with holding too much in the bank today, and we all get that. Well, Dennis, you're going to talk about inflation. Inflation has been quiescent for a number of years. And Ron has so assiduously looked up for us here this morning. I don't know why I'm so bloviating today.
You're bloviating.
Yeah. The Bill Riley version here in the flesh. But CPI. The CPI numbers came in this morning, and they were higher than anticipated, correct?
Yes. The experts on Wall Street expected a 4.7% increase for the month of May, but they were up by 5%, and that's up from 4.2% the month before. And then your so-called core consumer price index was up 3.8%. That's up from 3% in April.
And we discussed that last week. Core does not include food or energy. Right. So, you know, delusional. And that's unfortunately what the Fed is following in terms of their forward-looking plans for countering inflation, if you will. So these things, the cognitive dissonance, if we're confronting our own biases or biases, not quite sure how that's pronounced anyway, then we can say, how can I widen my stance? We're continually talking with clients about the importance of this because of what we see. These blind spots that we have can cause us to hold positions simply because we're comfortable. Well, that fund has always done well for me. Okay, when we look at that particular fund, you're concentrated 80% of your portfolio, perhaps, in a given fund, and it experiences all the negativity of the stock market and none of the gains. What does that mean? In this particular holding that I'm referencing, I'm not going to go into detail, it had a flat rate of return for the last 5 years. Well, the stock market has had about an average of 10 to 12% per year in the last 5 years. If you add the same risk in the stock market and are getting half the return, there's a problem, right?
Right.
That's where, in having someone like us review what's happening to your portfolio and perhaps help you with your blind spots, that's where we can make a huge difference to you and your family. So the cognitive dissonance can cause investors to believe, lastly, it's different this time. People who purchased high-flying, hugely overvalued growth stocks in the late 90s ignored evidence that there was no excess returns from purchasing the most expensive stocks available. So while a technology certainly has a significant amount of potential, a relatively high amount of that potential has already been written in or priced into the market. I'm not dissing owning some technology. It's just that the rates of return are not being reflected this year versus more conservative companies. So understanding, again, there it goes back again, the importance of diversification and the return projections, as noted here by Vanguard for U.S. equities for the next 10 years, 3 to 5% per year. U.S. value, 4.5% to 6.5%. Boy, they're still right on. So you're getting more return for more conservative stocks is what that's saying. Last, the best rate of return expected are from global equities, according to Morningstar, approximately a 6 to 8% return per year for the next 10. Again, pointing up the importance of being diversified, if possible, within your risk tolerance, your ability to withstand the vicissitudes of the markets. They do go up and down. They do. I get that. It's tough sometimes. It's tough to hold. But understanding, if you can invest, understanding and assisting in your own blind spots, it can be very helpful to you in terms of your long-term success as well.
And I just think that people should be careful because you're talking about 10-year averages there.
Correct.
And so remember,
each year return average over the next 10 years as anticipated by Vanguard, all right?
Yep. And so some years may be higher, some years may be lower, but you have to take in consideration that timeline again. And we always go back to, when do you need the money? When do you need the funds? So that's when Dennis talked about diversification is important, so that you can time withdrawals to take advantage of the good years.
Yeah. And the withdrawals are critical in terms of drawing income. So if you're looking to draw income from a portfolio, that's when some of this particular allocation needs to be set aside. I have to expect a lower rate of return because I need to draw income from that particular portfolio. So, of course, then other variables can come into that equation, if you will. How are we doing on time here, Ron? Just want to make sure we're on a schedule. 22.
We have time for my question.
All right, go for it.
How about that?
So if one is looking at all of the tea leaves and sees inflation.
Sure.
And then the predictions that possibly the capital gains could double, other taxes could go up in corporations.
Yeah.
There could be a sell-off in the future, near future maybe, right?
Right.
It's all could possibly kind of stuff here. But if one is looking at that and retiring in the next 3 to 4 years, would this be a time that they should recalculate?
Absolutely. Yeah. Given the lower expected rates of return, where the markets are today, the higher anticipated inflation rate, And these lower expected rates of return are given for reasons related to higher cost in the economy. Given that reality, by all means, yeah, you may want to become more conservative in your allocations to anticipate that need for income, especially the first 10 years of retirement. That's where we're going to tend to spend more. We're going to tend to need more from a portfolio. Not always the case. We have some clients that continue to just let it run. For them, it may simply be a diversification question. Again, widening your stance. For others, it may be holding more back and needing that for income. Okay?
Have a text question.
Sure.
It is. Let's see here. Don't you think that when you make a new investment, you should set an up and or down exit strategy?
Oh, that's a great question. Conversation yesterday with a client. He said, you know, Dennis, I had this number fixed in my mind. I said, I got out of the S&P 500. He said, basically at the low. He was talking back in 2009. And he said, I said to myself, when it gets back to this level, I'm going to jump in. And when it gets to the next level that I've set for it, he said, I'll bail. Well, those numbers that he were quoting were obviously very old. And he said, I never anticipated that this was going to go to 43, 4400 on the S&P. And so sometimes those, of course, you can adjust as you go along. But the problem with setting sells and buy numbers, honestly, frankly, you're going to be dead wrong. You'll be dead wrong over time. So you do have to reset your sights, but trying to time yourself in and out of the market never works. That's why the averages, well, it may work once when you get out. Wow, I'm glad I got out of that. But then you miss the uptick, which is exactly what happened last April of 20. The market turned around so quickly that everybody was caught in the headlights. They were caught in the squat. As they were cooked in the squat, as Zig Ziglar used to say. That's when the biscuits had not yet raised. Gosh, I love that guy. All right, conservatism bias can cause investors to cling to a view and nothing related to whether we're politically conservative or liberal. All right. Conservatism bias rather can cause investors to cling to a view or forecast of behaving too inflexibly when presented with new information. The investor may cling to the initial optimistic impression of some imminent positive development by a company and may fail to take action on the negative announcement. They also often do so too slowly with new information. They react too slowly. Now, it doesn't mean, again, that we're bopping in and out of the market or trying to time things. It's just that it's feeding into the current situation where our cheese is getting moved in this economy. Mm. And it's happening right under our noses. So we need to take a look. Conservatism can relate to an underlying difficulty in processing new information because people experience mental stress when presented with complex data. An easy option is to simply stick to a prior belief. The investor might discount the announcement rather than attempt to decipher it. Some of that may be related to simply make a decision based on the current political climate, which certainly can have its impact without really seeing what it's doing or what the opportunities are related to those changes that we are experiencing. And one of those things is climate change and inflation. And we're going to get to those stats, or at least try to here. We'll spend a little bit of time on that after Heidi discusses hers, which is long-term care. Long-term care and the issues related to it, the stats.
All right. So long-term care is one of those things that nobody really likes to talk about. It's not really a happy topic, but it is certainly a risk that we need to address or at least think about for retirement. And it's an unsystematic risk, and that's what we mean when it's something that happens randomly. So it's not like something like a required minimum distribution. We know when you turn 72, you have to take that because you just don't know. There's so much unknown if you're going to need care, how much care will you need. So that adds another complexity in trying to plan for that. So just some information is an average couple, according to Fidelity Investments, they did a study, and an average couple age 65 and enrolled in Medicare needs about $300,000 to cover long-term care expenses and health expenses, and that was their estimate. And then I also read a study by New York Life, and they did a different estimate where they said couples should look at budgeting about $4,500 per year for expenses. Some years at the beginning, probably maybe not spending that much, but over time, that was their estimate. So a national median charge for in-home care is about $54,000 a year, and a private room in a nursing home is about $105,000. So that comes from Genworth, and just those numbers are big, and so it's just to give you that awareness of the weightiness of what we're talking about here.
Hey, Heidi?
Somebody said that you could afford, if instead of the $105,000 a year, you could just go live on a cruise ship for a year, and it might be a comparable cost.
And more fun.
Maybe. But needing that specialized care,
right,
it may not quite be the same, and you may not get what you need. I don't know. So on average, men and women have needed care once they go into a facility for 2.2 years for men and 3.7 years. So that's just the average of, if you go into a facility, what the length of a stay is. So then we come to the really tough question, where is the money gonna come from to pay for the care? So that's a big question. And there's a couple of things. First of all, Social Security is usually used for your daily expenses. So especially for a couple, those are going to continue whether one goes into some kind of facility or not. So that income may not be available to pay for the care. Some other other options could be a reverse mortgage. That could be something that could be in the plan to help offset long-term care costs. There's HSAs. If you have HSA money left over, that can be used to help pay for your care. And then we come to the next option, which is your retirement accounts, your 401ks, your IRAs, simple SEPs, all those different retirement accounts. But the trick here, and something to keep in mind, is that when you take money out of those instruments, you have to pay income tax on that.
Right, which may be in the 20 to 30% range.
Right. So if you're in a 24% marginal tax rate, every dollar that you take out from the IRA, you have about 76 cents to spend. So, and what I call a domino effect from this, you have to keep in mind, is that a higher income can also affect your Medicare premiums. Part B and Part D might be affected if you start taking out larger sums from those retirement accounts.
Plus, it may bounce you into the next tax bracket as well. So where you previously might have been in the 12% federal bracket, you could well be in the 22% federal bracket because of those extra withdrawals that you need to take. And then obviously you're drawing from assets that you and or a spouse perhaps would then have used for your future, for your future life or lives, correct?
So that just points out why we have to plan. We have to plan for all different contingencies. Someone turning 65 today has a nearly 70% chance of one day needing some type of long-term care.
And that what's the chance, sorry, of that? What's
70. Someone turning 65 today. has a 70% chance of one day needing some form, whether in-home care, long-term care, specialized care, something like that.
Yeah, but unfortunately, a huge percent of the population refuses to hear that or accept it or do anything about it. That's just how it is. Isn't it interesting? I've seen, you know, what motivates people to actually make this decision, I think, is mostly around how it's going to impact those around you. What is it that I'm really trying to achieve, and what would this do financially to not only the spouse and or significant other or the children in terms of what we'd like to leave to them? So sometimes some of us, and I'll include myself, need to remember the other impacts that this has, not just the fact that I have a 70% chance of needing long-term care.
Right.
Okay.
So now we come to the question, Dennis, is, okay, so now that we have all of this information that's sort of overwhelming and a little
bummer.
Bit depressing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do we mitigate this risk, or how do we offset this risk? Well, long-term care is a good candidate for insurance products because the frequency per individual is low, yet the impacts to any given one given person can be severe. So you want to find a product that can take advantage of spreading that risk. So insurance products do that. And there are different products out on the market. Some of the traditional products that we used to go to, maybe for our parents or our grandparents, are no longer even offered.
That's right. They're gone. You're removed from the market.
Right. So there are some different alternatives, and I'm just going to mention a couple. And what I'm hoping this will do is just generate some thoughts in your head that you can go and you can ask your financial advisor or your insurance person, somebody that can help you navigate what's right for you. But there are life insurance policies out there you can take advantage of that specifically have long-term care riders or a chronic illness rider. There's also annuities that specialize in long-term care benefits. And really what you're trying to do is you're trying to get something that for that dollar you put into that product, it's going to give you a multiple of that in benefit back if you need it.
It's the same reason you buy home insurance. You don't buy home insurance thinking that your house is going to burn.
You don't want it to burn, right. Usually, right?
But you're sharing that risk with a lot of other insureds. The same thing is what you're trying to do here. Perhaps you're setting aside a certain portion of assets to care for that need, or to cover that need, rather, hoping, of course, that that never happens. At the same time, you're covering some of that cost. Perhaps not all of it, but some of that cost through these policies that, in essence, you don't have to say goodbye forever to those funds either. Many times you can get those funds returned to you, or a spouse or the family members will get the proceeds from the life insurance. So you're never saying completely goodbye to these dollars. It's just that you're setting them aside for long-term care purposes.
Right. And one other thing when you're talking about this that I wanted to point out is not only do you want to look at the product and how you pay for it and all those things, but you also want to look at how they pay you benefits. There's a couple of basic different ways. One is the cash indemnity style benefit. And under that, you know, if you require care on that day, they give you a certain dollar amount that to cover care. And it's just, if you have it, you get that dollar amount. Then there is the reimbursement option. And that in that option, you have to have the receipts and actually pay out that money in order to be reimbursed. So you want to look at your specific situation and see which one is best goes with your lifestyle or how you manage your household. So don't forget to ask how benefits are paid and what style and how does that work. Not just the front side of purchasing the product. And then just a little bit about right now with Medicaid. Medicaid is the primary payer right now in the U.S. for long-term care expenses. It's administered by the states, and we have about 71 million individuals that are involved in that program for long-term care with Medicaid.
And these are all people who are, in essence, indigent. And why are they? Because of the cost of long-term care or other medical needs. Given that reality, it just shows how many have spent down all their assets so that they can qualify for Medicaid.
Right. And there's rules out there, and, you know, there are some loopholes. People hear about those. But just remember that the current eligibility rules that they have today may not be the same eligibility rules 10, 20 years from now, and they may be stricter. So in that long-term planning, you have to take that into consideration as well. I know it's all happy stuff, right?
No. That's a great point.
But it's important.
It is important. You bet.
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
And I'm the other financial advisor, Heidi Thompson.
And I'm Shay Pataja. I put the fun in financial.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. Hello. Prout Financial Design. Mr. Dennis Prout is in. Heidi has stepped out. And look at Shay Pataja is here. Good morning, Shay.
Hello.
Hello.
It's great to have you here, Shay, talking about stats and a bunch of them here this morning.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot of fun stats. So I'll go ahead and start reading them and just raise your hand over there if you've got a comment.
You betcha.
All right, the S&P 500 has set 180 all-time record closing highs in the last 5 years, or since June 7th of 2016. That's an average of 3 record closes per month, and that's from BTN Research.
That's a stunning one, isn't it? 180 all-time record closing highs, 5 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, so as of June 4th of 2021, the yield on the 10-year Treasury note has been below 2% for 462 consecutive trading days. So that's since August 1st of 2019, the longest stretch below 2% in U.S. history, and that's from the Treasury Department.
It's a great indicator of where interest rates are, the 10-year Treasury. That's why they always are quoting it. Well, obviously, the S&P 500 is where the stock market is. The 10-year Treasury is a great indicator of where interest rates are because it's incredibly liquid, very safe. It's just the problem is if we don't have any interest rate out there, then all these fixed investments tend to just go down the tubes in terms of what we can earn. That's why savings rates are at zero at the local bank. All right?
Okie dokie. All right, so Congress is debating legislation known as Secure Act 2.0 that would require any employer with at least 10 employees who sponsor a 401k plan to automatically enroll eligible employees at a 3% contribution rate. Employees would retain the right to opt out of the plan.
That means that any employee, if this passes, and it's got actually a pretty good chance of passing, would have to put 3% of their comp into a 401k plan, at least 3.
I mean, I don't hate that idea. No, I know I a lot either. Of companies do it, yeah. And it gets people saving, which is what they're trying to help them do. And they can opt out.
And it's their own money. And a good point, they can opt out. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The 10-year budget forecast released by the Biden White House on Friday, May 28th of 2021, predicts that over the next decade, the fiscal year 2022 through fiscal year 2031, the government will collect $54.7 trillion in tax revenues, i.e. receipts, but spend $69.2 trillion, i.e. outlays, netting to a $14.5 trillion deficit created over the next 10 years. That's on top of our national debt of $28.2 trillion. at the end of May 2021.
Just rounding, the government will collect $55 trillion, according to their figures, in tax revenues over the next 10 years and spend $70 trillion. So that net difference, according to their numbers, would mean that we'd have over a $40 trillion deficit in 10 years. $40 trillion.
So I
well beyond our current total gross domestic product. Yes?
Question for Dennis and Shay. We'll just use a round number and say, if you said to your wife and Shay, you said, I am going to earn $100,000 in the next year, would you say, well, I'll set up my budget and we'll spend $140,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
denial. Right. It's
exactly.
No. Who does anyone care? You know, it's crickets.
Does anyone care?
At some point, until they do. You know, everyone is always talking about the deficit. Everyone's always talking about it. Does it mean anything? Most of the people go, oh, what are we having for lunch, dear? You know, that's just out the door. Until the government and its ability to collect tax revenue is insufficient enough to where the debt gets to the level that they can no longer cover their interest payments. Now, right now, the interest payments are more than the current total spending on our defense. So as those numbers continue to grow, believe me, the institutions that buy this debt look at those numbers and they parse. They take a look and they say, can this government continue to operate given the people's willingness and ability to continue to work in the economy, continue to generate those revenues? If there becomes a loss of faith in that government's ability to collect and cover those payments, that's when the proverbial crap hits the fan, as it did in Venezuela. Yeah. Or Zimbabwe, other favorite companies around the world that have totally, you know, destroyed their own economies through socialistic beliefs. You know, it's eventually we run out of everyone else's money and our ability to collect goes down the tubes. So right now, with their full faith and credit of the U.S. government is still good enough to cover that. Right now it is. Yep.
Well, I'm going to jump down and read this one that I was going to save for later, but I find this interesting. 59% of the world's foreign exchange reserves, cash holdings of central banks around the world, were held in U.S. dollars as of the end of the calendar year 2020. Its lowest level in 25 years, but still making the dollar the most popular currency in the world. The euro, representing 21% of global foreign exchange reserves, is the second most widely held currency, and the source is the International Monetary Fund.
Well, while that percentage is high, but we can basically say 60% of the world's foreign currency exchange reserves, that's the lowest level in 25 years. So why? Are other countries not holding as much foreign currency reserves? It's because they don't have as much faith in our dollar.
Their confidence is waning, huh?
Their confidence is waning. 25 years. There it is. It's tending to decline.
Wow.
Yep.
The median sales price of new homes sold in the United States in March of 2021 was $372,400, an all-time nominal record, non-inflation adjusted. The average sales price of new homes sold in March of 2021 was $435,400, also an all-time nominal record. The peak in both measurements, median price and average price, on an inflation-adjusted basis was set 4 years ago in May of 2017, and that's from the Census Bureau.
Wow.
49% of American women and 45% of American men begin taking Social Security retirement benefits before they turn age 65, and that's from the Social Security Administration, so almost half.
Yeah.
U.S. life expectancy at birth was 60.8 years in 1921, so you were expected to live about 60. The U.S. life expectancy at birth was 77.8 years in 2021. Thus, life expectancy has increased by a year every 6 years over the last century, and that's from the CDC.
Incredible. Life expectancy is continuing to get better.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the S&P has downgraded the credit rating for state-issued debt from Illinois 5 different times since 2009, and most recently in 2017, and that's from the S&P. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was funny because I tend to see a lot more Illinois plates around town, and I'm like, oh, where are they moving? Maybe here?
There you go. Their ability to protect their own state, their own residents within their own state declines. And also to cover their responsibilities, their liabilities.
Here's one more way states are doing that. 18 states have passed laws that legalize the use of cannabis for adults who are at least age 21. Colorado was the first state, beginning its legal sales of January 1st of 2014. From its inception through April 30th of 2021, Colorado has collected $1.56 billion of state tax revenue from cannabis sales, and that's from the Marijuana Policy Project.
Oh, I already have enough problems with impediments to my own thinking. I don't need to add one more component to that, right?
Could make it fun.
You bet. Thank you, Shay. Appreciate it. Good stuff.
Thank you, Shay.
Thank you.
All right. Do we need to take a break now, Ron, or can we go directly to our climate change and inflation?
We can go to climate change and inflation.
Beautiful. Energy and climate change. The accelerated focus, this is from Rob, our own economist that we consult with. The accelerated focus on climate change by both environmental activists and governments will add greatly to inflation over the next 5 to 10 years. Hydrocarbon energy prices greatly affect the broad base inflation indices. It goes on to note some other things, but to cut to the chase, notice that the BLS does not have a separate category for energy, but part of it does show up in the subcategories of the housing and transportation components. The BLS also tracks energy as a separate factor, which constitutes about 6.2% of the CPI aggregate calculation. Now, this is what's interesting, these next notes. This number, however, does not begin to tell the whole story. Energy indirectly greatly affects the change in price of the following CPI components. All right, here we go. 1, food and beverage. 2, housing. 3, apparel. A lot of apparel is made as a direct from hydrocarbons.
Sure.
Yeah. 4, transportation, obviously. 5, recreation. 6, other goods and services. In actuality, the cost of energy is one of the most pervasive and most important factors in the determination in the change of the CPI. Right. That's why I think we saw this continuing increase that was surprising. The market had predicted, I think, 4.7. We're at 5. Not a huge difference, but a huge change in the CPI. That number is significant compared to, you know, we've been in the 2 to 3% range, it seems like, forever in the average CPI. The average CPI of the last 20 years, I don't even think gets to 3. I think it's 2.2, 2.5 somewhere. It's just almost non-existent.
There was a video that went viral, and it was head of some energy company that they were boycotted or something by North Face, the apparel maker.
Yes.
And the guy went on the website and he said, well, 88% of the stuff that you're selling is made with petroleum.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
they don't get it.
Yeah.
Their own components. And what's interesting about that is that overseas, they're cheering these people, these groups that are hammering our own energy companies. Because what are they doing? Russia, China, they're developing their own energy resources significantly. Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.